The coronavirus pandemic has now claimed the lives of more than a million people around the globe. And as the human toll grows, we will continue to remember those who've died. That includes 76-year-old Shafkat Khan, who died from COVID-19 in April. He was a Pakistani immigrant who lived in Jersey City, New Jersey. His daughter, Sabila, joins us now. And Sabila, it has been nearly 6 months since your dad died, and I'm sure that you still think about him every day. Tell me about what made your dad who he was.
My father was an extraordinary man. He spent many years advocating for the rights of the immigrant communities here, particularly the Pakistani American community. He started a nonprofit in 2000 called Pakistanis for America with the intent of increasing voter registration amongst our community. And then in 2001, after 9/11 happened, he pivoted and started organizing panels that allowed the many diverse communities of our city to come together and talk beyond our differences. So he was very instrumental in helping our city heal. And I think a lot of his community service, particularly with the Pakistani immigrant community here, was informed by the fact that we ourselves were undocumented for over a decade after we moved to Jersey City in 1982. And I think that experience of living close to the edge without health insurance, toiling away 6 days a week as a general manager in a convenience store in Brooklyn, working 12 hours a day, I think that really inspired my father to help those who might not have had the access to cut through the red tape of bureaucracy.
And he got sick early in the pandemic. Can you tell me what happened? And did you know that it was that serious when he was hospitalized back in April?
So my father had Parkinson's disease, which he suffered from for 10 years. And he was in a rehab facility getting physical therapy for his Parkinson's. And the facility closed their doors on March 11th. So we found out, you know, long story short, we found out in a very roundabout way that a couple of the patients at the rehab facility had tested positive for COVID and that he was sick. The evening of April 6th, he was rushed to the ER because he was very congested. And the ER is 3 blocks away from us. And, you know, it's a special kind of torture when it was the height of the pandemic in the New York, New Jersey area. I could only imagine what kind of a war zone the ER was. My father was a big teddy bear when it came to hospitals. He hated hospitals. So the idea that he was there alone was just devastating for us. And his phone was lost. We couldn't call him. Even if we were able to call him, he couldn't speak to us. So it was just the most terrible 7 days that we spent as a family waiting for updates on him. And he was, we knew how serious it was. I remember when I found out that they were going to transport him to the ER, I collapsed. And I said to my husband, he's going to die. He's going to die. They can't take him to the hospital. He's going to die. But the time that he did spend in the hospital, his numbers were very, very stable until they weren't. His heart stopped the morning of April 14th. We got a phone call.
It sounds like also, I mean, this is what we learned so quickly about this disease is that our loved ones would die alone. And it sounds like that's what you experienced as well.
Oh, yeah. And he wasn't on a ventilator. He was on a nasal cannula. So he was alert and he awake, I would imagine, for most of it. So the fact that he was alone and aware and probably knew that he would never see us again was... it's just something that will haunt me for the rest of my life. And then even after he died, we couldn't be with him. We couldn't give him up. We had to watch his burial live streamed. And I think the only small mercy in this entire experience was that we're Muslims. And in our religion, the dead have to be buried right away. And we were initially told that we wouldn't be able to bury him for at least 2 weeks, which obviously was like just another sort of trauma on top of a trauma. But then family stepped in and were able to move mountains, and he was buried the next day.
Yeah. Sabila, I'm so sorry that you had to go through this, and I thank you for speaking to us about such a difficult time. And I want to ask you how it has been since those 6 months. I'm sure, as I said before, that you think about your father every single day, and yet we are in such an uncertain time. We are all still isolated. The economy is terrible. The country is fighting over the response to this pandemic. Does the time we're in make it harder for you to heal?
Oh, 110%. I mean, you would hope that during a time as terrible as this, that the country would be able to get together, right? The only other sort of national catastrophe I have that I experienced that I can compare this to is 9/11, and the country did come together. There was honor and respect and sort of memorialization of the dead at that time. Yeah. Those families suffered trauma too, but I'm sure that helped carry them through it. And for the COVID bereaved, we're living in a time where everything is so divided. There's so much hate. My father and that, you know, 200,000 plus death tally is a political talking point. And any way you see it, it's triggering for us. The news is triggering. That you have COVID deniers, that's triggering. Family and friends are triggering. Social media is triggering. There is no sense of normalcy that we as a community are returning to. And that makes grief very, very difficult. I've come to terms with the fact that I'm not going to be okay for a very, very long time. Grief, I'm sure, under any circumstances is difficult, but I have to believe that grief under these circumstances, it's trauma. We are a very traumatized community.
And now we've reached 1 million deaths around the world. And I see so many people who are tired of the restrictions, who are gathering in groups, who are starting to return to habits from before the pandemic. And I include myself in that group. What is your message to people after having gone through what you went through? What do you say to people?
This is real. Don't take any of this lightly. Don't take any of this for granted. I couldn't be with my father in his final days. It's okay if you don't attend a wedding. It's okay if you don't attend a birthday. I find it very offensive when people are going about their lives as if there isn't a pandemic. I just want people to take the science seriously. I want politicians to take the science seriously.
Before I let you go, can you share a memory of your dad that you're going to hold with you?
Oh, that's difficult. There's so many. My father was someone who was full of wisdom. And the one sort of conversation I keep on going back to now, especially in this day and age, is when I asked my father why he was so obsessed with the political process, the American political process in the 80s, because some of my earliest memories are of watching the news with my father, watching primaries and debates with my father. And this was, as I had said, this was really surprising to me later as an adult because we had spent so many years undocumented. And my father wasn't able to vote in a presidential election until 2000. So I asked him once why he was so obsessed with the political process. And he said to me that the political process of any nation impacts all of the people in that nation, documented or not. And that has really resonated with me, especially now. So I really, really hope that people do take this opportunity to vote. And if not for themselves, then for the families that can't vote, the many undocumented families and the over 200,000 people who can't vote today because they've lost their lives to this virus.
Sabila Khan of Jersey City, New Jersey, remembering her dad, Shafkat Khan, who died from COVID earlier this year. He was 76. Sabila, thank you so much for your time and telling your story.
Thank you. Thank you again for the opportunity.